That's right. Okay, we're going to get back to the study here on Satan, number 6. And we're still looking at the names and titles of Satan. And I'm almost going to finish them today. I had planned to, and then as I was reviewing this, must have been Friday, I got looking into some stuff about Hollywood and ended up putting a bunch of information in here. So I won't quite finish the names today, but I think I should be able to lump that in with the learning how to resist Satan and learning about his tactics next Sunday. So if you have the outline, we are on page 11, down on point number 10, and the next name is the tempter. If you want to turn to Matthew 4 and verse 3, we see here that this is this would be a title, not so much a name, but a title of the devil is the tempter, Matthew 4 and verse 3. This is, of course, the account where the devil tempted the Lord Jesus Christ and really tried to destroy him from being the Messiah. Because if he would have succeeded and Jesus would have given in to the temptation, then he would have been a sinner. And then he could have never died for our sins and we'd all be going to hell. So thankfully the tempter was not successful with Jesus as he is often with us, unfortunately. Matthew 4 and verse 3 says, "And when the tempter came to him, he said, If thou be the Son of God, command that these stones be made bread." The tempter is all I really wanted out of that. And we can see Satan's tactics as the tempter as we go through this first part of the chapter, which I will not do today because I will be going through that next Sunday, Lord willing. But we'll see what kind of tactics he uses, and we will see what kind of tactics we can use to resist him. But we'll get to that next time. But for now, just know that he's called the tempter, and this is an important piece of information whenever it comes to our battles with the devil. Tempter means one who or that which tempts or entices to evil, the tempter, specifically the devil. And to tempt means to try to attract, allure, incite, induce. It is to try to attract, to entice a person to do evil, to present attractions to the passions or frailties of, to allure or entice to evil with the prospect of some pleasure or advantage. And I think that definition really gets to the heart of what temptation is, because if you think about it, you just read through that definition and you think that's how we are enticed to sin. It's usually from attractions to passions, especially sexual passion, that's a huge one with human beings, frailties, to allure or incite to evil with the prospect of some pleasure or advantage, you know, maybe cutting corners on something to get some monetary advantage, to make a promotion at work, or whatever that might be. You can think of a million things where we might be tempted because of some pleasure or some benefit to us to give in to the temptation. And if Satan can do that, he can discredit us. And we'll talk about that next Sunday. The other place in the scripture is where he's called the tempter is 1 Thessalonians 3 and verse 5. 1 Thessalonians 3 and verse 5. So, and this is a good example of what it says in Hebrews, that there hath no temptation taken us, but such as is common to man, but God is faithful. And that's actually in 1 Corinthians 13. The one that I was thinking of is the one that says that Jesus is able to succor or to help us because he's been tempted like we are. And that was a paraphrase of that. But anyway, what I want to show you is that he's called the tempter when he tempted Christ, and we're also warned of the tempter. We are tempted by the same being that Christ was. 1 Thessalonians 3 and verse 5. It says, "For this cause, when I could no longer forbear, I sent to know your faith, lest by some means the tempter have tempted you, and our labor be in vain." Just as Satan was trying to destroy Jesus from being the Messiah, Satan was tempting this young church here. And if he would have succeeded, all of Paul's labor would have been in vain, because that church would have been tempted away, drawn away of their own lust and enticed. And when sin bringeth forth, when lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin. And when sin hath finished, it brings forth death. Now, the verse that I was referring to, let me just get to that one. I hate it whenever I quote out a verse and don't get it right. That's in Hebrews 2 and verse 18. It says, "For in that he himself hath suffered being tempted," this is speaking of Jesus, "he is able to succor," or that is to help, "them that are tempted." And then it says in chapter 4 that he was tempted in all points as we are, yet without sin, there in 4:15. We have not an high priest which cannot be touched with the feeling of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted like as we are, yet without sin. So he's been there. He's faced the devil and his temptations, and he overcame them. And therefore, we can go boldly to the throne of grace, which the next verse tells us to obtain grace and mercy and help in time of need. Now, let me just give you another verse just to substantiate what I said, that Satan does indeed tempt the saints, and I don't think this should come as a surprise to anybody. 1 Corinthians 7 and verse 5. Remember, in the definition of temptation, present attractions to the passions or frailties, right? That sexual passion is one of the things that Satan will tempt people with. This can even happen to married couples as well, and this is what Paul is talking about here. He says in 1 Corinthians 7, and verse, you really have to get verses 3 through 5 to get the context. He says, "Let the husband render unto the wife due benevolence, and likewise also the wife unto the husband. The wife hath not power over her own body, but the husband, and likewise also the husband hath not power of his own body, but the wife. Defraud ye not one the other, except it be with consent for a time, that you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer, and come together again, that Satan tempt you not for your incontinency." So husbands and wives are supposed to be providing for each other's sexual needs. And if you're going to take a break from that, Paul says, then do it just for a space to give yourself to fasting and prayer and then come together. Because if that need is not being met, then Satan can come in and tempt either one, either spouse, through that incontinency and end up not being able to withstand the temptation because that need has not been met. Satan loves to exploit a weakness. And that's one, or there's any number of other weaknesses that he can exploit. If somebody's given to alcohol or given to the propensity to want to drink more, then Satan can exploit that. Any number of things. If you're given to gambling or whatever, I mean, you name the weakness, Satan can exploit it. Now, Satan's children follow his lead in tempting the righteous. They did this to the Lord Jesus Christ. In Matthew chapter 16 and verse 1. So Satan's temptations may come to you just with a strong urge or thought in your mind, or Satan's temptations may come to you through some other reprobate that's trying to get you to do something you shouldn't do or to provoke you or something. It says there in Matthew 16 and verse 1, "The Pharisees also with the Sadducees came, and tempting, desired him that he would show them a sign from heaven." If they could get Jesus to show them a sign from heaven to prove something to them, right? He could show them, he'd showed them signs from heaven, right? He turned water into wine and he did signs and wonders. But if they could tempt him to do it to prove that he was the Messiah or something like that, where he was doing it not of faith, then they could have gotten him. But they weren't able to do that. He wouldn't do it. You just never want to forget that it's not God that's tempting you to do evil. Sometimes we have a propensity to think that if this temptation is in my life, God's allowed it in my life, obviously. God is tempting me to prove me if I'm gonna sin or something like that. Now, he may tempt you to prove you, but he will not entice you to sin. See, that's the difference. Because it does say that God tempted Abraham when he told him to offer up Isaac his son. God was not enticing him to do evil. God was proving him. And that's another definition of to tempt. But just remember, when you are enticed to do evil, it's never God that is enticing you. James chapter 1 and verse 13. We can never say, if we have a temptation to do evil, that God has given us this temptation to, you know, see if we will fall or something. And James says this explicitly there in James 1 and verse 13. He said, "Let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God, for God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man." So God does not tempt men with evil. He will not try to get you to sin. And he will not give you he will not allow a temptation in your life that is too great for you to handle. And that's what it says in 1 Corinthians 10:13. "That there is no temptation which hath taken you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that ye are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape, that ye may be able to bear it." So if God does allow that temptation into your life, he will not allow so great a temptation that you couldn't withstand it, that you had to give into it. Satan can easily tempt us because our flesh is so prone to being drawn away after our lusts. You see, the thing is, Satan has such an easy job because we have this flesh along with the new spirit that God's given us. We're like a split personality, basically. We have this evil flesh within inside us, this evil person within us, and we have this new creature that God's created in us. And it's so easy because Satan just, he can just present a temptation, an enticement to sin, and that old man wants to jump on that thing. And any man knows this. I mean, this is the easiest example that I can think of. Women wouldn't understand it, I don't think, as much, because they're wired differently. But for men, you just march a beautiful woman in front of a man, especially one that's immodestly clothed or something like that, and man, that's a temptation. And Satan, it's so easy for him to do something like that and really destroy a man, because the flesh is just so easy to get moving there. But anyway, James, let me just keep reading there in James 1, 14 and 15. But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. You see, it starts out with lust, then you're enticed. Then when lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin, and sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death. So there's the order of things. You're tempted when you're drawn away of your own lust. Right? Now, lust isn't necessarily a bad thing. It just depends. You know, we're supposed to, Paul talked about coveting people's prayers, right? Coveting and lusting are the same thing. And I'm trying to think, there's other places in the Bible, there are a few anyway, where lust is not necessarily a bad thing, right? I could be lusting after food if I'm hungry, right? If I haven't eaten in a day and I'm thinking about food and I'm lusting, I want that food. And there's nothing wrong with that. But when the lust hath conceived, and especially if it's a sinful thing, that's really the problem. Whenever that, if you have that lust and you don't stop that lust, that's the thing, and you act on that lust, that's when the lust becomes sin. Because you can have a natural desire. I mean, a man can have a natural desire for a sexual connection. But if you're not married or something, you can't act on that lust. And if you act on that lust, that's when the sin happens. Just the thought of it or the desire of it is not necessarily sin, but acting on it is. When lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin, and when sin is finished, it bringeth forth death. So Satan can get us if he can just get us to act on those lusts. And all he has to do is parade something in front of us that makes us want it, and then if we give in to it, he's got us. That's how he does it. I guess I'm kind of getting ahead of myself, because that's, in a lot of ways, that's what I'm going to be talking about next week. And Satan, and with today's modern media, he can use movies or pornography or advertisements, music, friends, strange women, you name it, all kinds of different things that Satan can use to entice our lusts. And if you think about it, I mean, how many things do people buy because they saw an advertisement for it, they saw it on TV? And usually, a lot of times, it's even subliminal, right? It's not so much you see it one time and you run to the store and you buy it, but you've seen it, and you've seen it, and you've seen it. And then maybe you've heard the jingle, you know, they'll have like a little song that goes along with it. And that stuff works. If it didn't work, they wouldn't do it. It does work. And Satan can use all that kind of stuff, especially to get us to do evil things. And movies, and just think about all the corrupting influences in movies, all the feminism and things like that that is spread, and all the degradation of men and degradation of women for that matter too. I mean, there's all kinds of things that are promoted in movies that just seep in like osmosis into our brains, and we start thinking like that. That's really the media is one step ahead of the degradation of society, because they bring all this stuff into our minds. Why do you think today that over 50%, I'm not sure what the figure is, but it's over the majority now, are in favor of gay marriage, when just, what, 10 years ago, that figure was way lower, not a majority? Why is that? I mean, has human nature all of a sudden changed and people realize that you know, disgusting sodomy is just fine now because we're different by nature than we were 10 years ago? No, not at all. It's because the media has promoted that so much in TV shows and in movies and in schools, and to the point where now they've swung an entire culture to promoting and being accepting of evil. That's how Satan works. So the name tempter shows us that Satan entices us to do evil. The next name of Satan is Belial. That's in 2 Corinthians 6 and verse 15. And I'm going to come back to this media thing here in a minute, but just be ever vigilant what you allow your eyes to see and your ears to hear, because it will affect you. Be not deceived. Evil communication corrupts good manners. 2 Corinthians 6 and verse 15. Especially children. If you have children, be very careful what they see, because they don't have the discernment that adults should have, and they can't tell right from wrong, especially the younger they are, and that stuff is going to sink right into their minds, and they're going to adopt that without even questioning it if you don't unteach it to them or prevent them from seeing it in the first place. Okay, anyway, Belial there in 2 Corinthians 6 and verse 15. It says, "And what concord hath Christ with Belial?" Or I'm not sure if it's Belial or Belial. I'm going to say Belial. "With Belial, or what part hath he that believeth with an infidel?" So Belial, this is actually another name for Satan, and the dictionary will tell us that. Belial is the spirit of evil personified, used from early times as a name for the devil or one of the fiends, and by Milton, I think he's the one that wrote Paradise Lost, if I remember right, yeah, Milton, and by Milton as the name of one of the fallen angels. So Belial is a name for the devil. What part hath Christ with Belial, or what concord hath Christ with Belial, or the devil? He's got no concord with him. Those two have nothing in common whatsoever. Now Belial, or Satan, he has children that are known by the following traits that they have learned from him. And I'm going to give you some of them. I got five traits here, and these are just verses in the Bible that tell us about children of Belial, and so I just figured I would compile these together and tell you some things about Satan, Belial, and some things about his children. The first thing is that they are idolaters and pagans. Let's look at Deuteronomy 13 and verse 13. Deuteronomy 13 and verse 13. The word Belial is not used too many times in the scripture, but it's used enough here that we can really learn a lot about Belial and about his kids. Deuteronomy 13 and verse 13. Let's just start with verse 12. Verse 12, Deuteronomy 13, 12. "If thou shalt hear say," you ever hear the term in court, it's hearsay? You know, "if thou shalt hear say," I just think it's kind of interesting there. "If thou shalt hear say in one of thy cities, which the Lord thy God hath given thee to dwell there, saying, certain men, the children of Belial, are gone out from among you, and have withdrawn the inhabitants of their city, saying, let us go and serve other gods, which ye have not known, then thou shalt inquire and make search and ask diligently, and behold, if it be truth and the thing certain that such abomination is wrought among you," then they're supposed to go and smite them, and so on. Interesting there, just before I get to what I wanted to cover on that text, hearsay, right? Somebody brings up a point in court and somebody says, objection, hearsay, right? You just heard somebody else say that, you can't prove it, right? Well, God here tells you how to deal with hearsay. If you hear someone say something, make a diligent inquisition and see if it's true, right? So God here shows us basically the kind of the legal system that we have. You just can't say hearsay, right? You've got to actually go and diligently prove out that this was actually said. And that's why the law of God says that in the mouth of two or three witnesses, let every word be established. So I just think that's really interesting there with the hearsay thing. But anyway, what I really wanted from that was they were supposed to go and inquire these children of Belial, because they had gone to serve other gods. So these guys are pagans. They're idolaters. This is what children of Belial are. The next thing that they are, and maybe not all the children of Belial are all these things, but this is characteristic of children of Belial, is that they're sodomites. Look at Judges 19 and verse 22. Judges 19 and verse 22. Judges is right there between Joshua and 1 Samuel. Judges 19 and verse 22. It says, "Now as they were making their hearts merry, behold, the men of the city, certain sons of Belial, beset the house round about, and beat at the door, and spake to the master of the house, the old man, saying, bring forth the man that came into thine house, that we may know him." Now, you remember it says that Adam knew his wife and she bore Cain, right? We may know him. This is a sodomitical union here. These guys were sodomites. Very similar what happened here in Judges 19 to what happened with Lot in Sodom and Gomorrah. In Lot's case, he brought in two angels, and the men of the city wanted to come in and sodomize him. In this case, this guy brought in a wayfaring man, and the same reprobates wanted to come in and sodomize him too. So anyway, this is children of Belial, or Belial. This is what they do. They also don't know God, but they sometimes get involved in religion for their own profit. Lots of televangelist preachers out there like that. 1 Samuel 2 and verse 12, Eli's sons were, I believe it was Eli's sons, were sons of Belial. Remember, Satan's ministers are transformed into ministers of righteousness. There are preachers out there that are actually children of the devil. 1 Samuel 2 and verse 12. Got to listen to their doctrine, because anybody can get up there and preach and tell you to be a nice guy and be nice to your wife and work hard and that kind of thing. But you got to listen to his doctrine, because Satan's ministers are not going to teach the truth. 1 Samuel 2 and verse 12. It says, "Now the sons of Eli were sons of Belial. They knew not the Lord. And yet these are sons of the priest, and they were ministering in the priest's office, and they didn't even know the Lord." Can you imagine that? You actually have guys in God's religion that did not know the Lord. They were sons of Belial. They were children of the devil. I do believe Belial or Belial is the devil. They were sons. Didn't say they were sons. Sons of Belial. They knew not the Lord. And their actions clearly manifest that here, as we will read. Let's look at 2 Samuel 13 through 17. 2 Samuel 2, 13 through 17. "And the priest's custom with the people was that when any man offered sacrifice, the priest's servant came while the flesh was in seething with a flesh hook of three teeth in his hand, and he struck it into the pan or kettle or cauldron or pot. All that the flesh hook brought up the priest took for himself. So they did in Shiloh unto all the Israelites that came thither." Now, this was not a practice that they were supposed to do. They weren't supposed to be dipping in there. There was supposed to be a portion given to the priest, as I remember back in the Old Testament. But what they were doing here, as we will find out when we continue to read, they were just dipping in and getting themselves some of that sacrifice for the Lord because they wanted it. And this is not what they were supposed to be doing. Verse 15. "Also, before they burnt the fat, the priest's servants came and said to the man that sacrificed, 'Give us flesh to roast for the priest, for he will not have sodden flesh of thee, but raw.' And if any man said unto him, 'Let them not fail to burn the fat presently, and then take as much as thy soul desireth,' then he would answer him, 'Nay, but thou shalt give it me now. And if not, I will take it by force.'" Talk about self-willed. That's what a minister is not supposed to be. Wherefore, the sin of the young men was very great before the Lord, for men abhorred the offering of the Lord." These guys were so corrupt that people just, they hated God's religion. And, you know, there's people out there, there's a lot of people out there that'll never join a church. And you know why? Because they've been so burnt on false religion, on religion calling itself Christianity, that they don't want any part of it because they think all of Christianity is what they experienced. They think it was all Eli's sons. And furthermore, he made them, they were laying with the women as they were coming into the temple there in verse 22. It says, "Now Eli was very old and heard all that his sons did unto all Israel and how they lay with the women that assembled at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation." So if dipping the hooks in there and taking some meat for themselves, if that wasn't enough to convince you that these are children of Belial, I would say anybody would say, yeah, probably prostituting the women that are coming there to worship God in his house is probably not a good idea. So yeah, these guys were wicked. Now, they were evil. And I just wonder, as I was looking through what I will cover in the remainder of the sermon, oh, I meant to say at the beginning of it, keep listening. I know you guys are going to, but anybody that happens to hear this, keep listening, because I got some really good stuff towards the middle and the end. But anyway, I'm going to show you how a lot of the famous people out there, entertainers, got to be famous from their own words. And then I just wonder, given that Satan's ministers are ministers of righteousness, I just wonder how many preachers out there popular preachers, big name preachers, Joel Osteen or Rick Warren or John Hagee or guys like that, Billy Graham, how many of those guys, I'm not accusing anybody because I don't know, but I just wonder, how many of them sold their souls to the devil, quite literally? And you think, why would you sell your soul to the devil to preach God's doctrine? Well, they're not preaching God's doctrine, right? They're preaching a perversion of God's doctrine. And, you know, you can think about it. If they are preachers and they want to be really popular, what better way to do it than to sell your soul? Jesus, the devil told Jesus, if he would bow down and worship him, all the kingdoms would be his, right? All the kingdoms of the earth. This is what Satan does. Bow down and worship me, and I will make you famous. I just wonder. And they're preaching lies, and they have huge auditoriums of tens of thousands of people. I just wonder. And some of them aren't all that impressive. I mean, I don't think Rick Warren's all that impressive, right? I don't think Joel Osteen's all that impressive. It's kind of annoying to me. Like, you just wonder, why are these guys so popular? I don't know. I'm not accusing anybody. I'm just wondering. Just asking some questions here based on things I see and read. Next thing about sons of Belial, I'm getting ahead of myself though, is that they're stubborn, foolish, and difficult to deal with. 1 Samuel 15, 17, and 25. 1 Samuel, I don't know if I said 15, but I meant 25. 1 Samuel 25, 17, and 25. 1 Samuel 25, 17 and 25. Now therefore, know and consider what thou wilt do, for evil is determined against our master and against all his household, for he is such a son of Belial that a man cannot speak to him. I mean, this is her own husband saying, this is Abigail talking about Nabal. And this guy was just such a fool, you couldn't even talk to him. You ever meet somebody like that? You just try to talk to him and just maybe you have some kind of a disagreement or you just want to share something with him, and it's just like he just blows up, gets mad. He's just such a fool, you can't even talk to him. This is what this guy was like. Really frustrating to deal with somebody like that. Imagine being Abigail. No wonder that as soon as Nabal was dead, she went and hitched up with David because she'd been married to a fool for a long time. Verse 25, it says, "Let not my lord, I pray thee, regard this man of Belial, even Nabal, for as his name is, so is he. Nabal is his name, and folly is with him." I always have a hard time not saying Nabal is his name and folly is his game, right? And I'm not the only one that's ever thought of that. Other people have mentioned that to me too. Folly is with him, but I, thine handmaid, saw not the young men of my lord whom thou didst send. Because David sent for help from Nabal, and Nabal said, you know, go bug off. I'm not going to help you. And David was about ready to slay all of them. And then Abigail went and took a whole bunch of bread and wine, if I remember right, and offered it to David's men to pacify David's anger. And he didn't end up doing something foolish and killing them all, which was a good thing. But anyway, this is son of Belial, just stubborn, foolish, can't deal with them. And they're also liars, that is the children of Belial. They're liars, false accusers, and murderers. 1 Kings 21 and verse 13. 1 Kings 21 and verse 13. So if you meet somebody and somehow you come to know that they are a son of Belial, you might want to stay away from them because, you know, liars, murderers, stubborn, foolish, sodomites, pagans, idolaters, not exactly a good crowd to be hanging out with. 1 Kings 21 and verse 13. It says, "And there came in two men, children of Belial." This is when King Ahab wanted to take Naboth's vineyard. You remember Naboth had a vineyard right up next to the king's house, and Ahab really wanted that vineyard of Naboth. But Naboth, that was his land by inheritance. You know, in Israel, you were given your land, and you just didn't give it up to somebody. That was your land. And even if you lost that land or something, you ended up at the year, either in 7 years or the year of Jubilee. I think it was the year of Jubilee every 50th year. All the land went back to the original owners. So if something happened, you fell on hard times and you had to sell your land, you would get it back at the year of Jubilee. So it was a big deal. You just didn't give up your land. And Nabal was a good man. He wasn't going to do that. So remember the story. Jezebel told Ahab, "I'll take care of this." So she goes and gets these guys to set Nabal up and to lie about him. And that's what we're reading about here. "And there came in two men, children of Belial, and sat before him. And the men of Belial witnessed against him, even against Naboth, in the presence of the people, saying, Naboth did blaspheme God and the king. Then they carried him forth out of the city and stoned him with stones, that he died. This poor guy didn't do anything except the right thing. He didn't blaspheme God. He stuck to his guns and wasn't going to give up his land through eminent domain, basically. That's what Ahab was trying to do. Ahab even offered to give him a better piece of land, and he wouldn't take it. He was a righteous man. You just think about that. God allowed that righteous man to be lied about, to be maligned, and to be killed, and he did the right thing. You just think about that. Sometimes, you know, God has purposes, and it's not no guarantee that something bad isn't going to happen to children of God. But just be faithful, because guess where Nabal is now, and guess where he's been for thousands of years? He's up there with the Lord Jesus Christ, I assume, being, you know, just the evidence and the fruit in his life here certainly looks like a righteous man to me. So the name Belial shows that Satan is the personification of all manner of evil, including idolatry, false religion, sodomy, fornication, corruption of God's religion, foolishness, lying, false accusation, and murder. And of course, we know that Satan is the father of lies, and he was a murderer from the beginning, right there in John chapter 8. We'll get to that verse many, many times throughout this study. All right, I got one more name before I get to the one that I'm really interested in talking about. This next one is the Wicked One. If you look in Matthew 13 and verse 19, Matthew 13, 19. Matthew 13 and verse 19. I'm going to compare this with a verse in Mark just to show you that wicked one is indeed Satan, the devil. Matthew 13 and verse 19. This is Jesus explaining the parable of the sower. He says, "When anyone heareth the word of the kingdom and understandeth it not, then cometh the wicked one and catcheth away that which was sown in his heart. This is he which receives seed by the wayside." So the wicked one comes. Well, if you compare that with Mark chapter 4 and verse 15, Jesus says there in a parallel text that Satan came and took it away. Mark 4 and verse 15. "And these are they by the wayside when the word is sown," where the word is sown, "but when they have heard, Satan cometh immediately and taketh away the word that was sown in their hearts." So you put those passages together, obviously the wicked one is Satan. And then John says there in 1 John 2 and 3 and 5, a few different times, that Satan is the wicked one, and he praises young men. I think it was young men or old men, I'm not sure. He praises them both, and one of them he says that they've resisted the wicked one in John chapter 2, 13 through 14. First John chapter 2, 13 through 14. I'm keeping you on your toes here, giving you the wrong reference just to see if you recognized it ahead of time or not. Actually, I'm not. That was just a faux pas on my part, but trying to make it look like I'm doing something good for you. 1 John 2, 13 through 14. John says, "I write unto you, fathers, because ye have known him that is from the beginning. I write unto you, young men, because ye have overcome the wicked one. I write unto you, little children, because ye have known the Father. I have written unto you, fathers, because ye have known him that is from the beginning. I have written unto you, young men, because ye are strong, and the word of God abideth in you, and ye have overcome the wicked one." So these young men, whoever they were overcomers. Just like John wrote later in the book of Revelation, "Blessed are they that overcome. They will have their part at the tree of life." And then John likewise says again, he calls Satan that wicked one in 1 John 3 and verse 12. "Not as Cain, who was of that wicked one and slew his brother." So once again, Satan is the wicked one. And one more verse for that, 1 John 5 and verse 18. 1 John 5, 18. "We know that whosoever is born of God sinneth not, but he that is begotten of God keepeth himself, and that wicked one toucheth him not." So right there is the key. If you want the wicked one, Satan, not to touch you, keep yourselves. He says at the end of the chapter there, "Little children, keep yourselves from idols, keep yourselves unspotted from the world," he says in another place, and keep yourself from sin. When we keep ourselves, then Satan doesn't touch us. Wicked is defined as bad in moral character. disposition or conduct, inclined or addicted to willful wrongdoing, practicing or disposed to practice evil, morally depraved. A term of wide application, but always of strong reprobation, implying a high degree of evil quality. And then it's used in the phrase, the wicked one, which is the devil and Satan, like I just proved to you from the scripture. Other devils, unclean spirits, are also called wicked. And you know what? I'm going to get to this passage here in just a second, I do believe. Yeah, so I will read that one whenever I get to it later on in the study. Satan is the most wicked because he's designated as the wicked one or that wicked one. So when you use a definite article like the or that, then that really specifies that he's like the most wicked one. He takes the cake. And then Satan has wicked children, of course, that follow his ways. They're in Matthew 13 and verse 38 in the parable of the wheat and the tares. Matthew 13 and verse 38. Matthew 13:38 says the field. Jesus then gives the interpretation of the parable of the wheat and the tares. He says the field is the world, the good seed are the children of the kingdom, but the tares are the children of the wicked one. And then they end up both growing until the end, and then he sends the angels out, and they separate the one from the other, the wicked from the righteous, and the wicked go into the furnace of fire, the righteous go into the kingdom of their Father. At the end of time, I'm going to talk about this later on in this study, Satan will manifest himself as the man of sin called that wicked. 2 Thessalonians 2, 8 through 9. This man of sin, some call the Antichrist. He is going to be, at the end of time, the culmination of Satan's grand war against God, and Jesus Christ is going to come back and destroy him with the brightness of his coming. We'll talk about that, though, later on. 2 Thessalonians 2, 8 through 9 says, "And then shall that wicked be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming, even him whose coming is after the working of Satan with all power and signs and lying wonders." So the wicked one will be manifested as that wicked, that man of sin that Paul calls him earlier in the chapter. He's going to claim to be God, sitting in the temple of God as God there in verses 3 and 4. And we'll get to those verses later on in this study. Now here's the part that I really wanted to get to. This is some good stuff, or some actually bad stuff, but it's good stuff as far as good stuff to preach about, but bad things to be involved in. And that is that Satan is the prince of the power of the air. I mentioned this a little bit the other day, but I have a lot of elaboration to do on it. In Ephesians 2, in verse 2, this is another title of Satan. Ephesians 2 and verse 2. It says, "Wherein in time past you walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now worketh in the children of disobedience." So Satan is called the prince of the power of the air. So being a spirit, Satan and his devils, they do travel through the air, right? They can do that. They don't have to have physical appendages like we do to transport themselves. They can, just like angels, they can just move through the air. And after being cast to the earth, and Satan's dominion was the atmosphere of the earth. And we talked about the three castings of Satan already, and the second casting was down to the earth. So at that point, he's confined to the atmosphere of this earth. Air, I will just define it for you. I think everybody probably knows what it is, but air is the transparent, invisible, inodorous, and tasteless gaseous substance which envelops the earth and is breathed by all land animals, one of the four elements of the ancients, but now known to be a mechanical mixture of oxygen and nitrogen with the constant presence of a small quantity of carbonic acid gas and traces of many other substances as contaminations. So I think everybody probably knew what that was. It's also the whole body of air surrounding, or in popular language, above the earth, the atmosphere, hence the apparently free space above our heads in which birds fly and clouds float, also considered as a medium for the operation of aircraft, a collective term for aircraft or aerial power, especially in combination as air arm, air cover, air offensive, air warfare. So this is the medium in which Satan operates, is the air. And for the last 120 years, Satan has made special use of the power of the air over which he's the prince. He's really made a lot of headway there using the air. Air is defined here, which is another different definition. The air is considered as a medium for the transmission of radio waves, colloquially radio. Secondly, it's when he uses the phrase on the air, being broadcast by radio transmission, so off the air. We've heard that, right? You're on the air, you're off the air, right? That's the airwaves that radios transmit electromagnetically. And I talked about that here a few weeks ago. So radio, television, satellites, cellular towers, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, they all transmit messages and information through the air. Satan's the prince of the power of the air. Now, who else but the prince of the power of the air is in control of all these technologies then? If Satan owns the air waves, right, he owns the air, who is in control of things that get transmitted across the medium that Satan is in dominion over? Of course, he's in control of it. Through electronic media, Satan has been able to control and influence the minds of billions of people across the world. He's the prince of the power of the air. Satan controls the media, Hollywood, and the entertainment industries, which all broadcast over the air. And he's been able to sway our culture away from God and his word through them, which is what I was talking about a minute ago. Now, I don't know if you know this or not, and this was kind of a shock to me years ago when I heard this, and I almost didn't even believe it. I just thought, this kind of seems fanciful. But I have proof for you out of their own mouths. I'm going to read you quotes out of these people's own mouths and give you the link that you can watch it on YouTube yourself, and you can see them say these things out of their mouths. Many actors and actresses have admitted to selling their soul to the devil. That is the truth. They have admitted it. And I just have a few of them here for you. I have a link to a documentary which you can learn a lot more. And I'm sure that's just scratching the surface of it. There are tons of them. And for every one of them that blatantly, openly admits it, I would imagine there are dozens of them that don't, that yet are still possessed with devils. Many of these celebrity types have said that devils have possessed them and gave them the ability to act and to write scripts. That is the truth. We are being entertained by devils. That is a fact. All of us. We have all been entertained by devils. You let that sink in. In the documentary by Pastor Jason Cooley down here in Northfield, it was basically a sermon that he did, and then they put the sermon to still images for the most part. So everything he's saying, then they're showing images of what he's talking about, and the people and the quotes and all the stuff, and all the stuff that they put into movies, subliminal things and so on. But anyway, he made that point. It just hit me like a ton of bricks. We are being entertained by devils. Not just movie actors, musicians, artists. We are being entertained by devils. Let me just give you some examples of the devils we're being entertained by. One of them is a guy by the name of Denzel Washington. Anybody ever heard of Denzel Washington? You would not think of a devil worshiper when you think of Denzel Washington, would you? You wouldn't think of a guy that's possessed of the devil, would you? Well, let me just read you what the man said. And then I have the link here. You can go watch him say it himself. He was interviewed on 60 Minutes. And he revealed the following. This is from his interview. And I watched the video and I transcribed all these. So if there is any error in the transcription, it is mine. And it was not done intentionally. And I reviewed it a couple times. So I think it's accurate with maybe, you know, minuscule little, you know, I might have messed up a word here or there or something. But anyway, you can check it out for yourself. Washington says, basically what I did, he's talking about this part that he played in this incredible movie. I don't even know what the movie was, but it was some part that was just amazing, like mind-blowing, his acting. And the guy was asking him about it. And Washington says, basically what I did was got on my knees and sort of communicated with the spirits. And when I came out, I was in charge. The host says, powerful scene. Washington says, powerful scene. I couldn't have acted that. I couldn't have written that down and made a decision to play that. So before he played this scene, he went and, quote, communicated with the spirits and came out, and now he's in control. And now he does this incredible acting that he admits, I couldn't have done. I could not have acted out that scene on my own. There was something in him that was acting out that scene. Anybody ever heard of a woman named Oprah Winfrey? Of course, everybody's heard of Oprah Winfrey, right? The queen of talk, right? One of the most influential women in the country, if not the world. Oprah Winfrey is a devil. This woman is a devil. She is a New Age devil, and this is a fact. Let me just read you some of her own words here. This is from her book, Journey to the Beloved. She starred in a movie about some slaves or something called Beloved. I didn't see it. I'm not familiar with it. Anyway, here's what she said in her own book. I was striving to create a life that, in many ways you cannot articulate, will be felt... I was striving to create a life that, in many ways you cannot articulate, will be felt in the spirit of the character. I asked my body to be the carrier for the spirits of those who have come before me in a way that is most meaningful to the character that I have created. She wants her body to be... possessed by these spirits so that she can bring these spirits out of her own body. Let me read you a little passage here from Time Magazine. This is an article called Daring to Go There, Time Magazine, June 24th, 2001. I got where Time Magazine is underlined there. That's a hyperlink. You can go click on that, go read the article for yourself. It says, there are times, though perhaps not many, when even the queen of talk is at a loss for words, when her lively brand of armchair wisdom collapses under the weight of personal revelation. Oprah Winfrey calls these her go-there moments, spiritual episodes of divine guidance that far transcend the chatty exchanges with her studio audiences about her fiancé Stedman, her best friend Gail, or even her dogs Sophie and Solomon, that often masquerade as intimacy. It is during these moments, usually while jogging the winding trails on her Indiana farm, that Winfrey becomes overwhelmed by the sense that old spirits are trying to get in touch with her. And it is during these moments that the woman who loves to talk stops dead in her tracks simply to listen. Sometimes the epiphanies carry the voices of Negro slaves, Joe and Emily and Dara, Sue and Bess and Sarah. Winfrey says she has come to know each of them personally and calls them in at will to guide her in her work. Did you hear what that said? She calls in the spirits of these dead slaves to come in and guide her in her work. She is a consulter with familiar spirits. She is a devil. This woman is evil, wicked. And I'll give you the verse later on that tells you that. This is Time Magazine. I mean, this is not tinfoil hat conspiracy website thing, right? I mean, this is mainstream. The spirits began visiting her a few years ago, shortly after she bought the property records of various plantations at Sotheby's auction. A collector of slave memorabilia, Winfrey cherishes the slave papers because these documents serve as the best vessel for connecting her through name, age, and price to the real human legacy of slavery. While filming Beloved, she kept the slave inventory in her trailer on the set. She dedicated scenes to individual slaves, get this, by lighting a candle and praying aloud to them. Often, though, she became so emotional that she couldn't perform the scene. Praying, lighting candles, and praying to these dead spirits. A seeker of familiar spirits. She's a wicked woman that's going to burn in hell. And then here's a quote from Oprah. I tried to empty myself and let the spirit of Seth inhabit me. And that, I couldn't actually find a citation where she said that. The quote is all over the internet, so I assume it was a legitimate quote from her. You can check that out for yourself. But the other one is from Time Magazine, so I don't think there's any question about that one. Oprah said that she tries to empty herself and fill herself with the spirit of Seth. It just really brought to mind a scripture about somebody emptying themselves and then being filled with devils. Matthew 12, 43 through 45. This is the passage that I was referring to a minute ago that I said we would get back to. Matthew 12, 43 through 45. And she's a New Ager. She's denied, you know, Jesus Christ, denied the deity of Christ. Has her own little Church of Oprah, hundreds of thousands of members, Church of Oprah thing. You can look her up on your own time. Matthew 12, 43 through 45. It says, "When the unclean spirit is gone out of a man, he walketh through dry places, seeking rest, and findeth none. Then he saith, I will return into my house from whence I came. And when he is come, he findeth it empty, swept, and garnished." Oprah says, "I tried to empty myself and let the spirit of Seth inhabit me." Yeah, so then the spirit comes back and finds Oprah nice and empty, and guess what happens? Verse 45, "Then goeth he and taketh with himself seven other spirits more wicked than himself, and entereth in and dwell there. And the last state of that man is worse than the first, even so it shall it be also unto this wicked generation." A woman full of devils. And she has influence for, Oprah was on TV when I was a little kid. She's been on TV for 30, 40 years, a long time. And she has influenced millions and millions of people. One of the richest women in the world, too. How do you think she got her fame? Probably sold her soul to the devil. The same spirits that she now communicates with and talks with. Denies Jesus Christ openly. Anybody ever heard of a guy named Nicolas Cage? Right, everybody's probably heard of him, probably seen movies with him. I saw some movies with Nicolas Cage years ago myself. I can't remember which ones they were, but I have seen him in movies before. Nicolas Cage was interviewed on the Showbiz 411, some show, I don't know, not familiar with it. And he said the following, and I transcribed the interview here for you. The host says, "You developed an acting discipline that you've referred to as Nuveo Shamanic. Is that correct?" "Yeah," he says. "What are the core principles?" the host asks. Cage says this, "I've been told that all actors really hail from the early medicine men and the shamans in the villages pre-Christianity, where they would put on masks and act out, and really what," and this isn't, I put a little sick there because his sentence didn't make sense, but anyway, "and really what they were probably pretty crazy, but they would go in and find answers to questions. Today, you're called psychotic if you do that." But that was his words, not mine. "But it's all semantics. So what I would do is I'd put on Afro-Caribbean paint, like a white and black paint, and black out my eyes so I look like this sort of Afro-Caribbean voodoo icon. And then I would sew in bits of Egyptian artifacts that were thousands of years old under my costume and gather some onyx and tourmaline or something that was meant to have vibrations, and who knows if it works or doesn't, but for me it was an idea of like trying to stimulate my mind or trick my mind into believing I was this character from another dimension. And I would walk on the set and then wouldn't speak to anyone or anybody, wouldn't say a word, so I projected this aura of horror which created fear in my fellow actors, which then inspired me to believe I really was this character." Sounds like a devil to me. Anybody ever heard of a guy named Jack Nicholson? Of course you have, right? Very popular actor. Very talented actor. And most of these guys are. Where do you think they get their talent? Well, listen to, you ever heard of a woman named Shirley MacLaine? She's a devil. Man, what a wicked woman. And she just rude. She's a B word is what that woman is. Just if you, when you click on this link here and you watch this little talk she was given and what she said about Jack Nicholson, if I was Nicholson, I wanted to go up there and slap her. But anyway, I guess, you know, they both have the same father, so they're probably not going to get too mad at each other, right? They're all the same. So Shirley MacLaine, she was talking at the AFI, the American Film Institute Awards ceremony, and she was talking about her experience that she had acting with Jack Nicholson. And here's what she said. you know, Jack Nicholson, A Few Good Men, wasn't he in that? You know, and various movies, tons of movies. Whatever that sick movie was, the Here's Johnny thing where he's chopping through the door with the axe, The Shining. I mean, he's a wicked. I mean, that's just look at, you just look at that. I've never seen that movie, but just look at that scene and tell me he's not a wicked man. You just can't act like that and not be a wicked man. Here's what Shirley MacLaine says. You can watch it for yourself. We launched into the first take. She's talking about this love scene that her and Nicholson did. We launched into the first take, and two voices came out of you. She's talking to Nicholson in the crowd, okay? So she's talking to Jack. You remember this? Remember when this happened? Remember we were acting out this part? And she's talking to Nicholson, okay? And the camera keeps switching back from her and Nicholson, okay? All right, now that I've set the stage. We launched into the first take, and two voices came out of you, speaking to Nicholson. Do you remember this? Nicholson smiles and nods, so he is affirming. Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah, two voices came out of me at the same time. Two voices, and they were simultaneous words, but they were two levels of sound. And I looked over at you. You were amazed. I was amazed. And you said, "Well, Cheryl, I'm many different people." I said, "No, Jack, you're channeling." And the audience burst into laughter. Channeling. Yeah, channeling a devil. Except two devils apparently didn't, you know, the devil didn't know what the right hand didn't know what they were doing, and they were both speaking out of his mouth at the exact same time. Two different voices, words coming out at the exact same time. He's a devil. And they all laughed about this, like this is just funny. I didn't think it was funny. Anybody ever heard of a guy named Kanye West? He's a rapper. I've never listened to this fool myself. But Kanye West, in one of his songs, and I got a link here, you can watch it for yourself. I would not recommend listening to this guy. But anyway, he said the following, "I sold my soul to the devil." He just said it. Oh, he's probably just kidding. He's probably not just kidding. He probably really did sell his soul to the devil. Why do you think he's now Kanye West and everybody knows him, or most everybody? I mean, probably everybody's heard of him, or a lot of people have heard of him anyway. Anybody ever heard of a woman named Katy Perry? Right? Very popular singer, I guess. I've never heard, or maybe I've heard her songs and didn't know it, but I don't know anything about her at all. I've heard the name, but and that just shows how culturally ignorant I am, probably. But let me read you what Katy Perry says. She admits to selling her soul to the devil in an interview. This was an interview, I don't know what, it was some kind of a show, anyway. Somebody was interviewing her. You can watch the video for yourself. Katy says, "What was going on in my life at 15, and that's how I got introduced to the music industry, because I swear that I wanted to be like the Amy Grant of music, but it didn't work out, and so I sold my soul to the devil." She's saying, you know how I got where I am now? Started out when I was 15, really wanted to be the Amy Grant, and I must admit, I've heard of that name, but I don't know who she is either. But anyway, she wanted to be Amy Grant, and I realize, you know, I'm probably so ignorant of so many things, and you probably think that I'm a little bit kooky. But anyway, she wanted to be Amy Grant when she was young, and it didn't work out. So how did she get to the level of fame she is now? "I sold my soul to the devil," she says. That's how these people get great. And it makes sense. Let me read it to you. I mentioned it earlier, but let me just read it to you, because maybe you just think, oh, you know, they're probably just saying that. I'll show you how the devil works. Matthew chapter 4. Matthew chapter 4. In verse 8. "Again, the devil taketh him up into an exceeding high mountain, and showeth him all the kingdoms of the world and the glory of them. And he said unto him, All these will I give thee, if thou wilt fall down and worship me." I will give thee all these kingdoms. You don't think that he could give them power and fame and to become a super famous artist or actor? Of course he could. "I sold my soul to the devil," she said. And you see what happens to these people. Look at Miley Cyrus. Used to be Hannah Montana, right? Cute little girl sung the, I don't know what, I've heard her songs. I don't know what they were. But anyway, these cute little songs, probably harmless back then, maybe not, I don't know. But anyway, you know what she is now, right? I don't listen to her, but I've seen pictures and clips of her. She is a rank, slut, disgusting, despicable person. Just gross, awful. I don't know how to describe her in any more descriptive words. She's just a horrible person. What happened to her? Sold her soul to the devil, right? What does the devil do when he's done with you? When sin hath finished, it brings forth death. My guess is she's not going to live out half her days. A lot of these people don't live out half their days. When Satan's done with them, he kills them. What a fool. Why would anybody do that? Sell your soul to the devil for some temporal fame, and you can see what's happened to the previous people that have done it. I'm just giving you a few. Anybody heard of Eminem? I will admit, and this is sad to say, that I used to listen to this reprobate when I was back in high school. He's horrible. I would definitely not recommend listening to him. Why did he get so popular? Why does he have such ability? And I will admit, this guy's horrible. Please do not ever listen to him. But I will tell you, this guy's got talent. Now, I mean, I don't like rap music anymore, you know, since I was a reprobate. But anyway, this guy, I can recognize, has talent. How did he get that talent? Well, he tells you. This isn't a song, and I think this song was something about Goodbye to Hollywood. I looked up the lyrics. I heard the clip of it in a video, and then I looked up the lyrics. And I don't know if he's just flipping the finger to Hollywood or what, but anyway, here's how he got where he is, according to his own words. The boy in the bubble who never could adapt, I'm trapped. If I could go back, I never would have rapped. I sold my soul to the devil. I'll never get it back. Isn't that nice? Sold his soul to the devil. Anybody ever heard of Beyonce? Right, very popular singer. I don't listen to her either, but I know who she is. I'm not that clueless that I haven't heard of her. She admits that she's only able to sing the way that she does by a spirit or a devil that possesses her. Let me read it to you out of her own words. She says, this is in an interview. I got the YouTube link there. You can watch it yourself. She says, I can try, but then it just doesn't happen. I can sing notes and sing strong and do all these things that when I'm just by myself, I can't do. I don't think she means by herself in a room. I mean, she's by herself, like not inhabited by devils, you know? She said, and I remember right before I performed, I raised my hands up, and it was kind of the first time I felt something else come into me. And she's got some split personality thing she talks about. I don't remember the name of it, but some devil that inhabits her, which is her alter ego or whatever. And yeah, she literally said, I lifted up my hands and something came into me, and then I can hit the notes I could never hit before. I can sing like I can't sing when I'm by myself. She's a devil-possessed woman. And all these people are in the Illuminati. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious. They all do the Illuminati hand, the 666 hand signals. They all do, you know, over their eyes. They're covering one eye. They're doing the whatever, like all the eye things, all the pentagrams all over everything. If you just look, and I haven't even hardly done any looking into it, but just very little. All-seeing eye, pyramids all over everything. I mean, these people are devil-worshipping Illuminati Satanists. Anybody heard of Bob Dylan? Old guy, right? He's been around since the 60s, I think. My dad probably listened to Bob Dylan maybe back in the day. Is he from here? Oh, I didn't know that. Huh. Well, I guess Minnesota has their share of reprobates too. Bob Dylan admitted in a 60 Minutes interview that he sold his soul to Satan in his youth and that he could have never written some of his songs himself, but he did it by magic. I'm going to read you the interview that I transcribed, that I watched. The host says, why do you still do it? Why are you still out here? Dylan says, well, it goes back to the destiny thing, and I made a bargain with, you know, long time ago. Let me read it again. Well, it goes back to the destiny thing, and I made a bargain with it, you know, long time ago, and I'm holding up my end. The host says, what was your bargain? Dylan says, to get where I am now. The host says, should I ask who you made the bargain with? Dylan says, with the chief commander. The host says, on this earth? Dylan says, in this earth and in the world we can't see. Who do you suppose the chief commander is in this earth and in the world we can't see? Who's the chief commander? Who is the prince of the power of the air? Who's the god of this world? The devil, Satan. He made a pact with the devil. He made a bargain with the devil, the chief commander in this world and in the world we can't see. The host says, you ever look over music that you've written and look back at it and say, whoa, that surprised me? Dylan says, I used to. I don't do that anymore. I don't know how I got to write those songs. Host says, what do you mean you don't know how? Dylan says, Well, those early songs were like almost magically written. And then he quotes the lyrics from his song, It's All Right, Ma, which I wasn't familiar with. And that was way back in the 60s. Dylan continues, well, try to sit down and write something like that. There's a magic to that. And it's not Siegfried and Roy kind of magic. You know, it's a different kind of penetrating magic. And I did it at one time. Ho says, you don't think you can do it today? Uh-uh. Does that disappoint you? Well, you can't do something forever, and I did it once, and I can do other things now, but I can't do that. There you have it. Sold his soul to the chief commander, the devil, Satan, and he's holding up his end of the bargain. Maybe that's why he's still alive. He's still holding up his end of the bargain. Break your end of the bargain and see what happens to you. And that's happened to many. And let me tell you, this is just the beginning. If you watch that documentary, which I'm going to recommend to you here in a few minutes, you'll see a lot more. You ever heard of Michael Landon? The Highway to Heaven show and Little House on the Prairie? You think just totally innocent, right? Little House on the Prairie, I used to watch it when I was a kid. That guy was a devil. He was a devil. He said that he would sit down and this power would come over him and enable him to write these scripts that he couldn't have written himself and just to write like crazy until the whole thing was done. He was a devil. His daughter said that he, whenever he, on his deathbed, he was reaching up and clasping his hands and screaming that he wasn't ready to go yet. Oh, he knew what was coming. He knew what was coming. That guy was a devil. James Dean, you know, way back, actor a long, long time ago, bad boy. Marilyn Monroe, you see what happens to them when Satan's done with them. Madonna, these people are devils. Madonna admits to being a worshiper of the Kabbalah. She admits to being a New Ager. She's a wicked devil. And that's just the beginning. I mean, there's so many more. These are just some of the actors and entertainers who have admitted to selling their souls to Satan and being possessed by spirits or devils who give them the power that they can do what they do. You see, these entertainers are wicked people who consult with familiar spirits. Let me show you what God says about what these people do. Leviticus 19 and verse 31. I know I'm going a little bit long today, but I definitely want to finish this. Leviticus 19 and verse 31. Remember Oprah? You know, she communicates with these spirits and has dialogues with them and everything. This is called seeking a familiar spirit. And God says the penalty for this is death. Leviticus 19 and verse 31. Leviticus 19 and verse 31 says, regard not them that have familiar spirits, neither seek after wizards to be defiled by them. I am the Lord your God. Familiar spirits, these spirits that come to you and communicate with you, that you're familiar with, right? Like Oprah says, I know them by name. They come and they talk to me. Right? Familiar spirits. This is what the Bible's talking about. Leviticus 20 and verse 27. Leviticus 20 and verse 27. It says, a man also or a woman that hath a familiar spirit or that is a wizard shall surely be put to death. They shall stone them with stones. Their blood shall be upon them. Let me tell you what. These Hollywood actors and actresses and singers, most of them, a lot of them, would be dead if we were living under Old Testament law back in Israel. Look at Deuteronomy 18, 10 through 12. Deuteronomy 18, 10 through 12. Deuteronomy 18, 10 through 12. It says, there shall not be found any among you. There shall not be found among you anyone that maketh his son or his daughter to pass through the fire, or that useth divination, or an observer of times, or an enchanter, or a witch, or a charmer, or a consulter with familiar spirits, or a wizard, or a necromancer. For all that do these things are an abomination unto the Lord, and because of these abominations the Lord thy God doth drive them out from before thee. What do you think the future is of this country when we have our entire entertainment industry filled with devils? God drove out the nations of the land of Canaan to let Israel have their land because they were full of devils. And guess what? Our country's full of devils. And our entertainment's full of devils. What do you think is going to happen? They passed their sons and their daughters through the fire because they were influenced by devil worshipers. What happens now? We abort millions of babies every year, or over a million babies every year, pass the kids through the fire, kill them. And some of these types are sickos, and they're pedophiles, and it's been shown, and it's been exposed, that pedophilia is the open secret in Hollywood. These people are pedophiles. They're wicked. And then they do other weird stuff like this, what's that called? The blood stuff where they take the blood and paint it on the walls. I don't know if you've heard of this. I don't even look it up. Spirit cooking. They call it spirit cooking. I don't know if you, that whole Pizzagate thing where they expose that, where you're looking, you don't know what I'm talking about, and that's fine. But the Pizzagate thing, Ben Swan exposed that, and then he went dark on social media for a year. They got to him, and now he's back. But anyway, some pizza shop in Washington, D.C., and it came out in some of those emails with John Podesta. Remember John Podesta, all the he was Hillary Clinton's campaign manager, and they hacked all those emails, and they found all this stuff. And there's all this weird cryptic language in there, and I don't remember the terms, but that pedophiles use certain terms to refer to certain things, because of course they're not going to use the real terms. And the FBI is onto this kind of thing, and they kept referring to this pizza place. And one of the signs of the pedophilia signs is a pyramid that kind of like a line that's in a pyramid, and it goes and it keeps getting smaller and smaller with an arrow, and kind of like a line that's made in the form of a pyramid. Anyway, that's a sign. I don't know who knows what it means, but anyway, it's a pedophilia sign. Well, this pizza place had, you can see it on Ben Swan's, if that, you can probably find it somewhere. Just search Ben Swan reality check Pizzagate, you can find it. Anyway, the sign of this pizza place, what the pizza, the triangular shape of the pizza, was this pedophilia sign with the little thing with the arrow in the middle. Whenever they were exposed by some people in the alternative media, they changed the sign. Now their sign doesn't show that anymore. It's different. It just kind of looks like a piece of pizza or something. They think there's a pedophile ring being run out of this pizza place there in Washington, D.C., and that the Podestas were involved in. Of course, nobody's ever going to investigate this, and anybody that would be dead. Well, hopefully I'm not dead for talking about it. But anyway, so where was I going with that? Anyway, they're pedophiles. They're wicked. And they do crazy, blood, what did I call it? Spirit cooking stuff. And I'm telling you, these are evil people. Evil people. We're being entertained by devils. Saul died for consulting with familiar spirits. Look at 1 Chronicles 10 and verse 13. 1 Chronicles 10 and verse 13. 1 Chronicles 10 and verse 13. And I don't know for sure that there's that pedophile ring's going on there in that pizza place, but there's some really weird stuff. And when you look into that, I don't know. I'm sure we'll never find out. 1 Chronicles 10 and verse 13. So Saul died for his transgression which he committed against the Lord, even against the word of the Lord, which he kept not, and also for asking counsel of one that had a familiar spirit to inquire of it. You remember when he went to the witch at Endor, right? And he consulted with the familiar spirit. She brought up Samuel. Saul died for that. He died for consulting familiar spirits. And these celebrities deserve the same thing. And they'll get it someday from God. We ought not to have fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. Look at Ephesians 5, 11 through 12. Ephesians 5, 11 through 12. You ever wonder, and if you watch this documentary, you'll learn about it, but you ever wonder what the word Hollywood means? Why they call it Hollywood? I never even gave it a second thought. I never thought about it. Hollywood, holly tree. The holly tree, remember Christmas decked the halls with boughs of holly? The holly tree is a symbol in paganism. It's like it's a big thing to them. It's an evergreen tree. It's an evergreen tree with leaves, though. But it's a fertility thing to them. Hollywood, holly tree. Unless there's some other explanation, I don't know. When I heard that, I'm just like, man, that makes sense. That makes sense. Ephesians 5, 11 through 12. And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. For it is a shame even to speak of those things which are done of them in secret. We're not to have fellowship. We're supposed to reprove those things. That's what I'm doing right now. You know, Paul ran into a woman that had a spirit of divination, and he didn't listen to her. He rebuked her, and he cast that devil out. Acts 16, 16 through 18. Acts 16, 16 through 18. And it came to pass, as we went to prayer, a certain damsel possessed with a spirit of divination met us, which brought her masters much gain by soothsaying. The same followed Paul and us, and cried, saying, "These men are the servants of the Most High God, which show unto us the way of salvation." And this did she many days, but Paul, being grieved, turned and said to the Spirit, "I command thee in the name of Jesus Christ to come out of her." And he came out the same hour. This devil was possessing her and telling her certain things to say. And you know what she said? In this case, was actually true. "These men are the servants of the Most High God and are come here to tell us the way of salvation." There's nothing wrong with what she said. She was speaking the truth in that case, right? But Paul wouldn't have it because he knew that it was a devil using some of the truth to get people into bondage and lies and deception. Satan's ministers are called ministers of righteousness. 2 Corinthians 11, verses 14 through 15. 2 Corinthians 11. I just want you to think about this. 2 Corinthians 11, 13 through 15. "For such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into the apostles of Christ. And no marvel, for Satan himself is transformed into an angel of light. Therefore, it is no great thing if his ministers be transformed as the ministers of righteousness, whose end shall be according to their works." His ministers are ministers of righteousness. Now, you think about some of the things that Hollywood puts out, like Little House on the Prairie, and it seemed like a pretty wholesome show. I don't know. I guess somebody was telling me there was some strange stuff in that show, and I watched it so long ago that I don't remember, but some weird stuff. But for the most part, just good, wholesome values and morals and so on. And that's what Hollywood does. And I got this from Jason Coley, too, in the documentary. Hollywood instead of God's righteousness being proclaimed, they substitute with morals, right? So they teach you good morals, good ethics sometimes. His ministers are ministers of righteousness. They'll teach you some good things, right? They mix that in. It's rat poison is, what, 1% strychnine or something, and the rest of it is healthy food. That's what Satan does. They're ministers of righteousness, teaching you morality. Not teaching you biblical righteousness, but morality. And morality is whatever you want it to be. I mean, morality is whatever the society thinks is a good thing. It's, you know, good behavior. We must all seriously consider the entertainment that we allow ourselves to see and hear. Now, I'm not up here. I'm not going to tell you to never watch another movie again. I'm not going to tell you to never listen to popular music again. I'm not telling you that. I think there's some movies that you absolutely should stay away from, and there's some music that you should absolutely stay away from. But I'll let you be the judge of that. But I just want to sound the clarion call that we should seriously consider the entertainment that we allow ourselves to see and hear. If you watch movies or you listen to music, you should do so with your guard up at all times and scrutinize what you and your children watch or listen to. 1 Thessalonians 5:21 says, "Prove all things, hold fast that which is good." We should not watch or listen to anything without scrutinizing it. And my wife will tell you, when we watch movies, and it's really hard to find a decent movie to watch at all. We've been watching The Andy Griffith Show on Netflix, which is pretty wholesome, but even they even have feminism back in the 60s back there. But anyway, for the most part, it's a pretty wholesome show, and there's some good, you know, good morals that Andy's teaching his son and all that kind of thing, and it's funny, and it, you know, it's a pretty decent stuff, I think. But anyway, when we've watched movies, and she can tell you, I'm probably like the worst guy in the world to watch movies with, because I'm watching it with a scrutinizing eye, and I'm pointing out every single thing that's wrong with it. See that feminist agenda there? See that sodomite agenda there? Look at those fornicators. Everything. You probably wouldn't want to watch a movie with me, although I wouldn't say anything if I wouldn't interrupt your movie. But when I'm with my wife, I don't mind interrupting the movie with her, and I point out every single thing that's wrong. And everything that's fictitious as well. So I can't hardly enjoy a movie. I watch some action movie and I'm thinking, that's impossible. They can never do that. You know, the laws of physics wouldn't allow that. So I know I'm crazy. But anyway. But the point is, when you watch stuff, watch it and scrutinize it. Because evil communication corrupts good manners. It will affect the way that you think and the way that you live, and especially for your kids. If you got kids, and the younger they are, it will affect them. It's not just movies, music. And I just want to ask you a question. Just think about this. I wrote this down this morning. I'll put it in the outline later. But what kind of fruit does music like heavy metal or rap or punk rock or some of that stuff, what kind of fruit does music like that bear? Just think about it. Think about the music itself, the electric guitar, it's loud, it's rash, it's gets your heart all pumping and gets you all pumped up and all this stuff. What the music itself, think about that. the lyrics. Think about the lyrics. And you probably can't understand them because they're screaming at the top of their lungs, which that's the evidence of a madman, right? So you're playing this crazy music, right? You're screaming at the top of your lungs, and you're screaming obscenities for the most part and ungodly stuff that you might not even be able to understand. Just think about that. What kind of fruit does that bear? Is that the fruit of the Spirit? Rap music, for goodness sakes. I mean, do I have to say anything more? Have you ever listened to that stuff? Most of it is wicked. They talk about evil, wicked stuff, fornicating and all kinds of other stuff, and you know all about that. Does that bear the fruit of the Spirit? Compare the effect on your spirit when you listen to that type of music, heavy metal, rap, punk rock, that kind of stuff, and when you listen to classical music. Compare how that affects your spirit. How do you feel after you get done listening to heavy metal? I mean, your heart's racing, you're pumped up, you're whatever. How do you feel when you get done listening to classical music? You're at peace, right? What is the kingdom of God? Righteousness, peace, and joy in the Holy Ghost. Do these other types of music, do they characterize the fruit of the Spirit? Let me just read you the fruit of the Spirit and just think about AC/DC and Metallica and Megadeth and Led Zeppelin and whatever, all that other stuff. I don't listen to any of it. Or Eminem and all the rap and Jay-Z and all this other garbage and stuff that I did used to listen to, unfortunately, I'm ashamed to say. Just compare that music and just think, then read this verse and tell me if that music fits right into the context of this verse. If it does, by all means, go out and listen to it. If it doesn't, consider what you're listening to. That's all I'm asking you. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm not telling you what to listen to. Galatians 5, verse 22. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. Against such there is no law. Now, the last I checked, those are not words to lyrics of heavy metal or rap songs. I don't think I've never heard anything like that. I don't know of any of those type of songs with these words in the title of them or any such thing like that. Let me give you another litmus test. Look at the book of Philippians. Look at Philippians 4. Here's another one. Run your entertainment. Run your movies. Run your music. Run your art. Run your whatever. Run it through this filter here and see if it passes. Philippians 4 and verse 8. Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things. Now, I dare say that does not describe the music that I just talked about. It doesn't describe a lot of the movies that are out there. I'm not against music, per se. I'm not against movies, per se. You know, I'm not against that stuff. I'm just saying be cautious about what you listen to. Let me ask you a question, one more thing on the heavy metal and the rap. And just be honest with yourselves. Could you study the Bible while listening to that music? Because some people, they can study when they listen, you know. Now, I mean, if you could, I don't know. That just seems, I don't know. I couldn't. I can tell you that much. That's not a standard necessarily. But could I, on the other hand, study the Bible listening to classical music? Absolutely, I could do that. I generally don't. I don't listen to anything when I study the Bible. But I could. For me personally, if there's words at all, I have a hard time studying the Bible because I latch onto the words. But just the type of music, I mean, I couldn't listen to heavy metal and be reading the Bible. I mean, that just, to me, those two things just don't mix. Now, maybe you don't agree, and that's fine. Be discerning and circumspect when it comes to what you allow your eyes to see and your ears to hear. That's why I read Ephesians 5, 14 through 17. I'm almost done here. I got to finish this up. I know this is long, and I do apologize for that, but I think it's important enough that it was worth keeping you. Ephesians 5, 14 through 17. Wherefore he saith, awake, thou that sleepest, and rise from the dead, and Christ shall give thee light. A lot of us, I think, have been sleeping with the entertainment that we allow ourselves to have and the pollutions that we allow to get in our minds. And we're all guilty of this. We've been sleeping. And Paul says, get awake. See then that you walk circumspectly, looking around, paying attention, not as fools but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. You realize, talk about redeeming the time. Things that you watch and listen to will stick in your head forever. You know that. You know what I'm talking about. I could, this is pathetic, but I could sing you verbatim some horrible songs that I used to listen to in high school. 20 years ago, I could sing you verbatim a song that I have never heard in 20 years, which is nothing but filth. Now, let me tell you what. If I would have read a Bible verse 20 years ago, could I repeat it back to you if I've never read it for 20 years? Of course not, right? I've got Bible verses that I've read 1,000 times, and I still can't quote them just right, and I got to go look for them, right? But boy, I'll tell you, listen to a Jay-Z song 20 years ago, and I could quote you every word of it. It has a power and an effect on your mind, and when you listen to that stuff, it's going to stick in your mind. Pornography sticks in your mind. Anybody that's ever seen it knows. You can never get it out of there. That's why I'm just telling you to be careful about the stuff that you watch and listen to, because it's going to have effects on you for a long time. It says in Psalm 101 and verse 3, Psalm 101 and verse 3, David said that he would put no wicked thing before his eyes. Psalm 101 and verse 3. David says, I will set no wicked thing before mine eyes. I hate the work of them that turn aside. It shall not cleave to me. Boy, if that's not talking about Hollywood, I don't know what is. I will put no wicked thing before my eyes. I hate the work of them that turn aside. They turn aside to devils. They told you that they did that. I read you the quotes from their own mouths. I will put no wicked thing before mine eyes. Movies and music that have satanic or occultic themes or evil and ungodly messages in them should be destroyed. I'm not saying all music, I'm not saying all movies, but when you have movies and music that clearly have occultic, satanic, or just evil and wicked themes and lyrics, they should be destroyed. And I have a Bible verse that will give you that precedent, that principle. Look at Acts 19, 18 through 19. I'll tell you, when I listened to that documentary by Jason Coley, afterwards, the couple of movies that I had left, I just took them and snapped them and put them in the garbage. I thought, you know what? I'm just done. They weren't all that bad, but they weren't all that good either. I'm not telling you to do that with all your movies or anything. I'm just saying if you have movies that are just patently bad, evil, wrong, then you want to get rid of that stuff. Acts 15 and verse 33. No. What am I doing? Acts 19, pardon me. Acts 19, verses 18 through 19. And many that believed came and confessed and showed their deeds. Many of them also which used curious arts brought their books together and burned them before all men. And they counted the price of them and found it 50,000 pieces of silver. So mightily grew the word of God and prevailed. You see, when these Ephesians were converted to be Christians, they were involved in curious arts. That's occultic stuff, right? They were reading satanic things. They were involved in witchcraft. Right? That kind of stuff. And they burned those things. They didn't sell them. They could have made a fortune. 50,000 pieces of silver. That's a lot of money. They could have made a lot of money off that. But they burned it. They got rid of that stuff. We are all being programmed by Satan's entertainment industry, whether we realize it or not. We are being programmed. Do I need to prove it? What do they call television? Programming. Right? Television programming. I don't think that's by accident. It's programming. They are programming us. We are being programmed to think in a certain way. Remember the gay marriage example? Nobody would think that way, or very few people would think that way if it wasn't for television, right? If it wasn't for the media. That we are being programmed. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33, to be not deceived. 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33. Be not deceived. Evil communications corrupt good manners. See, we can't, none of us can watch all kinds of filth and let that come into our minds and not be corrupted by it. None of us can. Paul says, don't be deceived. If you think that you can watch and listen to ungodly, satanic things and not be corrupted by it, you're deceived. Paul says, don't be deceived. Evil communications corrupt good manners. Like I said, music and images stick in your mind for a long time, and they're very hard, if not impossible, to remove. I know what I'm talking about. I've recommended it already, and I'll give you the name of it. I recommend that you watch, it's a sermon documentary. It's basically his sermon, and then it's put to still images for the most part. Maybe some videos in there, I don't remember. Anyway, it's called Hollywood's Satanic Roots, The Movie Reloaded, Jason Cooley. And I gave you the YouTube link there to it. I think it's about an hour, a little over an hour, maybe an hour and a half long. And he gives you a lot more detail than I did. So with this sermon and then with his sermon, you put the two of them together, you're going to have a pretty good idea about Hollywood. Just remember, we're being entertained by devils. Don't forget that. So getting back to the sermon, the title, The Prince of the Power of the Air, shows that Satan's realm is the atmosphere of this planet and that the air is the medium in which he exercises his power, especially through the media today. So I thank you for your kind and patient attention, and pray for me that I don't end up in prison or dead.